I, Gerald R. Ford, do grant.
The other passengers there reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused.
The young man makes up his mind to work. There's no limit to what he can do.
This is truly the next chapter in General Motors' recovery and turnaround.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
When you're a leader, the decisions you make, for better or for worse, have lasting repercussions that echo into the future. And if you ask the descendants of Leopold Pokagan, they will testify that he made the right decisions. It's Wednesday, time to talk our state's history with our partners at the Michigan History Center. With November being Native American History Month, we now welcome the director of the Michigan History Center, Sandra Clark. Hello, Sandra.
Hello.
Good to have you with us again. And Dr. John Lowe, who earned his PhD in American culture at the University of Michigan and is an enrolled citizen of the Pokagan Band of Potawatomi Indians. Currently, he's an assistant professor in comparative studies at Ohio State University, Newark, where he teaches history and American Indian studies. John, it's so good to have you with us.
Fantastic to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So we are going today to dig into the very interesting story of a Potawatomi leader named Leopold Pokagan. And John, before we get to Leopold's story, give us an idea of what life was like for the Potawatomi in Michigan in the early 1800s and how things were changing for them.
It was a period of a lot of stress and tension. The days of fur trading were falling apart. The conflicts with Europeans were occurring. The Potawatomi specifically had been involved with the Northwest Confederacy, Little Turtle, and Blue Jackets, and had resisted continued movement of American settlers into the Great Lakes region. They'd also been involved, some of them, with the Battle of Fort Dearborn and Tecumseh's movement to define an Indian territory, an Indian country that would not be lost.
Where was the Potawatomi mainly living?
We were living along the St. Joseph River Valley in southwest Michigan and northwest Indiana.
As I read what the tribe called themselves, I just love that. Tell them what they called themselves and what that meant.
Well, we called ourselves the Potawatomi, which means keepers of the fire. We also called ourselves the Anishinaabe, which means the human beings. So Potawatomi, the oral history is that there were Jesuit priests that were canoeing down with Hurons, Indians canoeing them, past the lakeshore, Lake Michigan. And the priests asked the canoers, who are those people on the shore? And the Hurons thought, they're asking them, what are they doing? And they responded, they're tending the fire or they're keeping the fire. But it also represents our alliance, our confederacy with the Odawa, the Ottawa, the Ojibwe, and the Potawatomi, because we're the Three Fires Confederacy. And so we are the keepers of fire. The Ojibwe are the keeper of the traditions, and the Odawa are the keepers of the trade.
Sandra, as white settlers kept pressing westward, this policy of removing the native people really kicked into high gear. So how were tribes in Michigan reacting?
Tribes, I'd rather call them bands because we're really talking about small communities, but obviously reacting to it in very negative way in the sense that they did not want to leave Michigan. They did not want to leave the home of their ancestors and the home that they hoped would be the home of their children. And so they took a lot of actions to attempt to remain in Michigan. One group held a council around 1832 over on the west side of the state and considered their options and basically said, most important is that we stay here. There were some who, when things got too much pressure, left, went to Georgian Bay, Walpole Island, Canadian, British territory. So some chose that option. There wasn't a universal reaction, but a pretty universal idea that this was home and this was where they wanted to stay.
John, how did the Potawatomi fare in this removal process?
Well, it was a different experience depending upon which band you were a part of. In 1833, the United States government called the Potawatomi to the Chicago area for a final land cession treaty, essentially going to be a removal treaty of the Potawatomi. And so the bands from Wisconsin, the bands from Michigan, the bands from Indiana, Illinois, they came, oftentimes under a sense of coercion and duress, because they knew that if they didn't negotiate some kind of deal, they would get no deal at all. So they came to Chicago in 1833, and they negotiated with the United States government for what was to happen to them and their children in the future.
Ultimately, this led to something that is called the Potawatomi Trail of Death. Certainly people have heard of the Cherokee Trail of Tears. What happened there?
Yes, the Trail of Death begins essentially in Twin Lakes, south of Plymouth, Indiana, where Menominee's village, the state militia surrounded the Menominee's village under the pretext of organizing the people to come to the village church, and there was going to be a possible gift-giving or annuity. And instead, the militia surrounded the church and began to march the Potawatomi west, mostly by foot. As they went along through the rest of Indiana, through the rest of Illinois, they gathered up other Potawatomi. It was a very difficult process. At least 100 or more of the Potawatomi died along the way and were not given a chance generally to bury their dead, which was very egregious. And so they were marched out to Osawatomie, Kansas. But the Pokagon Potawatomi escaped that through that 1833 Treaty of Chicago when they negotiated a sidebar agreement.
Yes, and this is where the story of Leopold Pokagon really begins to develop. Tell us, how does his story begin, John?
Apparently he was not Potawatomi. He was Odawa or Ojibwe, probably. But he's captured by the Potawatomi and adopted into the Potawatomi tribe and is adopted by our then leader, Topinabee. So he becomes the adopted son of Topinabee. And when Topinabee passes in the 1820s, Leopold takes over leadership of the village, not because of any hereditary sort of sense, but because he was a charismatic and competent leader. So he then sought to negotiate a passage of how are the people going to stay in our ancestral lands? That was, as you mentioned earlier, of primary importance to many Potawatomi, not all, but many Potawatomi insisted that they wanted to stay where we walk on the bones of our ancestors, which is a compliment when we say that, that we have been here so long and our ancestors so plentiful that we walk on their bones. And so he negotiated an opportunity for Christian Potawatomi to not be removed. And he had, prior to the treaty, went to Detroit and implored upon the Detroit Diocese of the Catholic Church to provide a priest and renew the Catholic relationship with the Pokagon Potawatomi that probably had been in existence when the Jesuit priests had been here 100 years earlier, but had left as France was driven from the area.
So renewing those ties, Sandra, with the Catholic Church, what opportunities did that bring?
Well, that brings you the opportunity to be considered a civilized person. In the language of the day, Native people who practiced their traditions were savages. And to be civilized, you had to be Christian. You had to educate your children, and that tie with the Catholic Church would also bring that opportunity for education. And you had to farm, be settled. And so this was a big step to demonstrate that you were not a threat. You were a citizen or acting like a citizen and therefore should be allowed to stay.
Which was the ultimate end game. John, was this a spiritual conversion or was this a political maneuver?
Well, I think it was a spiritual conversion that had significant, long-lasting political implications. I think it's interesting to note that Leopold Pokagon chose the Catholic faith, which, as we all know, in the 1820s, 1830s, was not the most popular Christian denomination to be a part of.
In the U.S., you're right.
Exactly. It was Catholic hysteria, and anti-Papist feelings were quite strong. And so the Catholics generally were marginalized in the United States. And so I think Leopold, by choosing the Catholic faith, there's a bit of genius there in that he doubly insulated us. People left us alone, one, because we were Indians, and two, because we were Catholic Indians. And so they just stayed away from us. And as long as we didn't cause trouble, and as long as we tried to fit in, as long as we appeared to be assimilating, then people allowed us to stay.
How long did Leopold live?
Leopold passed 1841, but he lived long enough to use treaty monies that he'd gotten from a land cession in Indiana to purchase lands near what is now Dowagiac, Michigan, Silver Creek Township, which continues to be the epicenter of the Pokagon Potawatomi Nation today, although our reservation, as he had envisioned it, was basically taken from us in the 1800s.
There's so many nuances, is there not, Sandra, to the way that this band was able to just kind of, maybe in a sense, work the system, but they got to stay and not get marched west.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Lowe, but they actually go to federal district court in Detroit to stop their removal.
You're correct that there was a movement to remove the Pokagon Potawatomi, and representatives of the Pokagon Potawatomi went to a state Supreme Court justice, Ephraim Ransom, and he issued an opinion that said that we could not be removed, that we had complied with the Treaty of 1833, and so we were not subject to removal. So yes, we did have to seek legal redress after we had been told we could stay here. Even afterwards, we had to pursue our rights and remedies to remain here.
That's Ohio State University history professor and Pokagon Band of Potawatomi citizen, Dr. John Lowe, and the director of the Michigan History Center, Sandra Clark. Thanks to both of you for sharing this very uniquely Michigan story of Leopold Pokagon.
It's been our pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.